TXFM presents. Album Anniversaries with Joe Donnelly.
This is Album Anniversaries on TXFM. It's Joe Donnelly here, and today I'm looking at an album that was, according to some, responsible for reinventing anthemic rock. It was 1995, and Radiohead had already established themselves, especially with the huge radio hit Creep and their album Pablo Honey. But their follow-up, The Bends, really was about to change everything. It was produced by a man who also produced the Stone Roses debut album, and he's worked with the likes of The Fall, Suede, The Verve, John Lennon, Pink Floyd, Simple Minds, Public Image Limited, and countless others. He is John Leckie. Hello, John.
Hello. Hello, Joe. Yeah.
How are you?
Afternoon. I'm fine.
20 years. Has time flown?
Yes, it has. I can't believe it's 20 years. I thought it was just a few years ago, but yeah, 20 years.
Well, I remember my first introduction to it. I was on a student visa in the United States, and I was working with a girl, and I think I'd OK Computer. Mm-hmm. And she said, hang on a second. Have you not listened to The Bends?
The
one before. And I said, I think I've heard one or two songs. And she said, no. She said, in 20 years' time, you're still going to be listening to The Bends, but I don't think you will with OK Computer. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just saying it now that you're here speaking to me, but it's actually true. It's actually true.
Yeah, a lot of people say that.
Yeah. Let's put a context on it first to start off. Creep was doing very well for the band. It was a huge hit. It was big in the States as well, which is quite significant. And it was getting a lot of airtime on MTV, something which, and we might come back to this later, kind of annoyed Tom York. But they were touring, and they were touring quite heavily. And that was kind of that was taking a bit of a toll when you were approached to come in and work with them first. I think it was on the My Iron Lung EP.
Yeah, that was the first thing that was released, yeah. Although they had toured a lot, they'd written and rehearsed a lot of songs. I think at the time when I first met them, I met them at a gig, a show in Gloucester, and went along and was really impressed, and we sat and talked, and then I went to a rehearsal room that they had in Oxford, and it was very strange setup actually, because there was a lot of pressure for them to come up with a hit single, because Creep was doing well at the time. The record company kind of wanted a follow-up single. And so when I went into the rehearsal room, there was actually A&R men. Someone had flown in from Capitol in America to hear the new songs, and the manager and myself there. And the band played 20, 22 songs, you know, that they had.
Wow.
And we all sat around and said, well, which one's the single? You know, which one's the follow-up? And, of course, no one could decide. So they said, well, I tell you what we'll do. We're going and we'll do four songs. We'll pick four songs, which are A-sides. And I'll tell you what these were. They were The Bends, Nice Dream, Just, and I think Bones, actually, yeah. Hmm. I mean, My Iron Lung never came into it, really. It was it wasn't one of the pick four. And so we went into the studio, and then they said, well, while you're doing these four A-sides, do you think you could do four B-sides as well? Because when we release it, we're going to need the B-sides. Mm-hmm. And if you have some time left over, you can finish the album.
Right, just like
which
that.
Which was a bit of a tall order, really, you know. So anyway, we did go in the studio, and as I say, the band were very well rehearsed. I mean, they could play the songs through. It was really a matter of capturing the right sounds for all the instruments, which took some time, and the right performance of them playing together. I mean, most of those tracks on the record are actually, they start off with them playing live, you know, either two guitars or a guitar and a keyboard, bass and drums.
All together.
And a vocal, yes.
Okay, because I know that they did take a break. They had to go and play some gigs. But you felt that it wasn't a bad idea for Tom York to sort of record some songs by himself.
That was more circumstance, actually.
Was
what
it?
Happened is that we went into the studio, actually, for 9 weeks, can you believe, on the trot. I mean, I think we had weekends off, but it was over 2 months. It was 9 weeks in the same studio in London. And at that time, after that, they had some gigs, and we kind of recorded, how many songs? We probably recorded 15 songs during that time. Mm. And we were happy with maybe half of them or something. And then the band went off on some tour in Singapore, and I don't think they even went to Australia. It was just like a Far Eastern tour, like Bangkok they played.
And yeah.
And played these new songs. And when we came back, we then went to another studio, which is the Manor Studio, which is out in Oxford. It used to belong to Virgin and Richard Branson. We recorded. We spent 2 weeks there and more or less recorded a lot of it again, about five or six or seven more tracks, you know.
Was there still label pressure coming through? It was EMI, wasn't it?
No, they'd given up.
Okay. Right.
After 9 weeks. I think they chose My Iron Lung, or somehow the decision came round to for that track, which was kind of unusual because it wasn't the most commercial at all on the record.
This is a bit of a broad question, but I really want to get into the songs, but hopefully you can answer it. Were some songs more difficult to produce or realise the vision of the songwriter? And is that difficulty and stress worth it when you get the final song that that everyone is happy with?
Yeah. You never know when the magic's going to happen, really. You never know if it's going to be first take, or if it's going to be, you know, lots of attempts, maybe 50 takes and 3 days slogging at it, you know, and sometimes you go back to the first take. Sometimes, usually the last take that you do, however many you do, is the magic one kind of thing. But it is really down to recognizing the magic, where the band and myself and people in the room, I mean, you can, with a band like that that can play very well, you can get something that's adequate. But to capture the magic mysterious ingredient, we don't know what it is, the interaction between the instruments or the melody or the groove. I wouldn't say the tempo, you see. A lot of songs are done to clicks now, like a metronome click.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, I've always been against using clicks. I've always thought, well, the drummer keeps the rhythm and the bass player keeps the groove, and that's how the song goes, you know.
I know this has been mentioned before, it's been written about, Johnny Greenwood was quite particular about it, about his guitar sound.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things, you could say experimental things that we were doing, was exploring different guitar sounds, and we rented lots of different amplifiers, a Marshall amp and different guitars, crazy guitars and things. And more or less went back to his original setup, which is a Telecaster you often see him playing, and the Fender Twin Reverb, and one pedal, one kind of distortion pedal, which I think was called a Blues Breaker or something. And we did spend quite a bit of time with guitars with Johnny. And, you know, of course, he doesn't play a lot of the time. A lot of the time it's Ed kind of keeping the rhythm. I mean, Johnny's sound is kind of, sometimes it's the perfect guitar sound, and sometimes it's completely different. It could be a keyboard or something.
Mm.
You know?
He's a very talented musician. He's gone on to be a very successful film score composer too.
He is, yeah.
He's a really talented chap. Just on that, let's take one of the songs. I would like to ask you if you could name one song that may be a particular favourite from the Bends.
Well, my one is Fake Plastic Trees, which, you know, is still one of the ones I'm kind of most proud of. I don't know. It's still a mystery to me what it's all about.
Right. Really?
I enjoy its, you know, its classicalness and the dynamic of the song. Yeah, that's the one I'm going to choose.
Yeah, it's funny. I think he's on record as saying it was about a kind of the commercial development of Canary Wharf, Fake Plastic Trees, because apparently Tom York's songwriting got a lot more, had a lot more depth in it on the Bends and addressed a lot of issues that would become more frequent. Just on producing that song, did you feel, was that a memorable moment of magic, as you've talked about in this interview?
Well, it was really, because they had a demo of it, which was just Tom strumming the guitar. We didn't quite know which direction it was. We knew that that was the basis. The performance was going to be the nakedness of the acoustic guitar and Tom's voice with all the space. And so we recorded that first, and it was actually recorded a bit under pressure because we'd booked a violin player and a cello to do some strings, like a string quartet, for one or two of the other songs. And we said, hey, we should put strings on Fake Plastic Trees. And they're coming in tomorrow. You know, they're going to be here at 10 o'clock in the morning. You've got to get the song down. You've got to record the song so we can play the strings over the top. They wouldn't do it together, of course. So there was a little bit of pressure. But one of the main things on that is the organ. It's the Hammond organ, which Johnny played. And it took a day or two to get. And what it is just the notes and the tonality of the different notes and the mellowness and the edge and the attack sound or the lack of attack sound on that. So
it's a great piece of work. Let's hear it now. This is Fake Plastic Trees from Radiohead.
The green plastic watering can.
That was Fake Plastic Trees from Radiohead from the album The Bends. This is TXFM with Album Anniversaries, and it's Joe Donnelly here, and I'm talking to the producer of The Bends, John Leckie. John, throughout the album, there's kind of we talked about Fake Plastic Trees there. You could put that alongside High and Dry. There's an emotional impact. And then with other songs like Bones and Planet Telex, you have this sound which has been written about so much that it's grand, it's sweeping, it's epic, and it's kind of redefining a particular kind of music. Was that something that was on your mind, or do you go in and go, right, well, here's these guys and this is what I see coming from them. I think I know how to get the best out of them. Or do you have a thing at the start where you go, I know exactly what we're going to do?
No. Okay. Often at the start, I don't know what we're going to do. It kind of comes from the band of how they perform it. I mean, you mentioned some of those songs, you know, Bones is a live performance, really. And, you know, it was really choosing the performance that had the right swagger to it. You know, it's kind of slow. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to play that song fast and you lose it. And it was kind of, you know, keeping the swagger and the general feel of it. But Planet Telex was there's a story behind that, of course, because it's the only one that is done to a click. It's actually a drum loop. So what happened there is one evening we went to a restaurant and we were all staying in this studio in London for all that time. And one of the only once did we go out and went and ate at a restaurant and had a couple of bottles of wine and came back, and we were buzzing a bit on a song we'd recorded in the afternoon. We said, hey, we could use the computer. We just got Nigel Godrich, the engineer, had just got a computer and a sampler at the time. That's how long ago it was. And just found out how to work it. So he made up these two drum loops, which is the rhythm for Planet Telex. And we spent the rest of the evening overdubbing, throwing sounds at it. You know, the guitar, the tremolo guitar, the electric piano with the delay echo, the ba-ba-ba-ba kind of sound, which was all done live, really. All those delays was me playing with the echo thing while Johnny was doing the stabs. And then about 4 o'clock in the morning, I said to Tom, hey, you better try the vocal now. And Tom just went out there and sang what's on the record. I don't know where he got the lyrics from. I mean, my feeling in the studio is that we were making it up at the time.
Right.
Obviously,
right.
They'd had something a little bit more planned because Tom had the lyric there. And, you know, they had all those songs they played us at rehearsal and they never played us that one.
It's funny you mention Planet Telex and the tremolo. I mean, that sound is so arresting. It's so brilliant. And yet it goes back to, you know, Link Wray and Rumble and that legacy of doing things with a guitar when you get into a studio that are exciting and kind of original and fresh.
That's right.
There's a story. Elastica, the band, their debut album was released the exact same day as the Bends. And
I worked on that as well.
Did you?
I mixed some of the songs.
Okay. It's funny, at the time, and I would remember this from reading The Enemy and Melody Maker and all the rest of it, all the hype was about Elastica because Britpop was going on, and there wasn't much about the Bends, and yet the Bends have certainly stood the test of time.
Yeah.
Were you aware, or was it bothersome, or did you even care about this Britpop thing which was happening at the time? There was a lot of hype, there was a lot of identity.
Didn't care about it whatsoever, really. It was just a collection of those bands, Oasis, and then there was Blur, and then there was all the bands underneath, and so there was the record companies were thriving. I mean, the record companies were selling tens, hundreds of thousands, millions of records. You know, and even singles, CD singles, it was still based on selling CD singles. And they would put different B-sides, so they would do two versions, the same A-side, and then throw three Radio 4 sessions or you know, demos and things as the B-side and release different versions. So, and they were selling them. I mean, the record companies, yes, were. I think that's how the Britpop thing came about. I don't think it was a style of music. It was really what people were, well, it's what the record companies were signing at the time.
And, yeah.
And luckily, you know, the good ones have stayed with us, you could say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mean, well, Pulp's Different Class is 20 years old this year as well.
I don't think Radiohead were ever interested in singles. You know, they were, what can I say? It was art to them. Mm. I mean, they'd never say that, but to them, every track was equal. I mean, you gave every track equal attention, and every track was precious, you know, because it was going to be there forever. We were very aware that whatever we put down, you know, people would be listening to in 20 years' time.
Which they are. Mm. Finally, John, especially towards the late 90s, as we reached the end of the century, a lot of newspapers and music magazines and websites were doing lists of the greatest albums of all time, the best bands of all time. And it's great. I love a good list myself. The Bends is consistently there in the top five this and the top three that, number one, left, right and centre. There's too many to mention. Mm. For you, in your own work and in your experience, where does it rank?
Oh, up there, really, in the top five somewhere. I mean, certainly, you know, in the top three of the best records I've done. You know, I've done quite a few records, but I've, you know, yes, definitely up there in the top five. And it's it is enduring. It doesn't sound dated, really, and it's way ahead of everything else on that was around at the time. Yeah, I still can't fathom out what it's all about, really. Because, you know, lyrically, I mean, that was one of the things, I think, with Tom's lyrics. I mean, he purposely, I think because he got a lot of, not question, there was a lot of debate about lyrics and meanings. I mean, not so much in the studio, but I'm sure in rehearsal and at the time of writing, Tom purposely would make things obscure,
cryptic,
still poetic.
Yeah.
But visuals, you know, there's great imagery and, you know, he leaves it to you to create the image, really. And he just hints at emotions and things, but uses his voice and the sound of the music for the atmosphere that the voice is in.
I think it'd be rude if I didn't finish by asking you to pick another song and we can go out on it. Why not?
Great.
You know, from the album. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to pick Just. because Just is actually a live performance done at Rack quite early on, like the second or third day, that whole piece. And to me, it's just perfect the way it's the sounds and the guitar and the solo. And again, this kind of swagger that they seem to talk, you know, the band seem to have as a band, as a unity thing. I don't know where it would come from. But yeah, Just is my next favourite there.
Brilliant stuff. Producer of Radiohead's The Bends, John Leckie, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Okay, thanks.
TXFM presents Album Anniversaries with Joe Donnelly.